The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you are listening to Beat and you're very welcome to The Sunday Grill. And let's talk to my first guest. Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy. They are now really in famous words from the viral Coldplay concert clip. The aftermath of that clip has been huge for the couple who were both married to other people. Andy Byron resigned from his job as a CEO, and then Kirsten Cabot, who joined the same firm as Chief People Officer approximately 9 months ago, has been put on leave. So why did a public moment outside of the office have such dire consequences for the jobs of these people? And how should you approach a relationship in your workplace? Well, hopefully that person you're dating, if it's in the workplace, is not already in a relationship. Well, Elaine Fennelly is the author of Nude, Rude, Lewd, Crude, Screwed and Sued, 50 HR Stories from the Modern Workplace. And with a book cover name like that, she is the perfect person to talk to about this situation. You're very welcome back, Elaine.
Oh, thank you, Orla. It's been a while since we chatted.
It really has. A couple of years ago about Christmas party do's and don'ts, and you had some really good advice and stuff that I have stuck to.
I'm glad to hear you behaved yourself. Yeah, look, in my career, what I have discovered is it's the HR issues that always cause the headaches in the company, no matter if they're a tech firm, an AI firm, whatever is the core business. It's always the HR stuff that trips people up. And what a perfect example this whole Coldplay concert was.
What, when you saw it, did your HR hat turn on immediately?
Oh my God, I just thought of the crisis that they were having at board level, at senior management level. I was thinking, are there contracts in place? What about the clauses, the legals, the solicitors involved?
And Elaine, was it because they work in the same company? Is that why you were thinking those things?
Look, people can date and work in the same company. Absolutely. It's very hard to legislate against that, you know. But good companies have good policies and procedures. And, you know, there's all sorts of clauses about what you must declare and how you manage a conflict of interest. And I think this company just were a disaster. I mean, from day one, they didn't say anything. Then they put out a generic statement. There was no openness, no transparency. So what happened in the void? AI filled it. We had false statements, false videos.
Yeah, and good statements, though.
Yeah. And the irony was, this is an AI company. So yeah, it was like this guy was getting burned by his own technology. And it was like, oh my God. It was like a car crash to watch. It really was.
Elaine, did it matter, though, that they were from the same company? Would it have been less of an issue if it was two different companies involved?
Well, that's interesting, because the modern day contracts, particularly in state-of-the-art billion-dollar companies like that, would have romance clauses. They would have, oh yeah, brand and reputational damage clauses. So CEOs who are looking to raise more money off investors and, you know, off other people, you know, they're held to account and, you know, they are rated and they're scored on a variety of things. So this guy, you know, with one viral moment, managed to do immense brand damage.
Yeah.
And his contract, probably, because we all know he's gone now, he resigned, inverted commas. So obviously, like, the financial implications to the company were huge, and he paid the price. So if they were in a different company, he still may have
it
had that fallout.
Have been him. Yeah. And then what about her as a HR professional, is what she was.
Oh my God, what about her?
If it was just her, would it have had the same consequence if it was someone who didn't have such a massive job as in him? What way would that have worked?
Well, look, what everybody thought when they thought about her is she is the chief people officer. So she is the HR person.
She knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, she's written the ethics policies. She's put together the documentation, the codes of conduct. She's the person that is responsible for retaining staff and for having happy staff. And when I heard about it, I thought, oh my God, I'm thinking of all those disgruntled employees who are going, ha, I knew this was a toxic company, toxic culture. And
so really, they haven't done anything wrong legally, but what they did wrong had an impact on the company that they worked for and the reputation of that company.
Oh,
is that right?
Completely. Look, the skills shortages out there, we all know that. There's not enough tech people out there. This is an AI company that want to get the very, very best of the talent that's out there. And the modern worker these days, the millennial, the Gen Z, they just don't want a job. They want to work for a company whose values align with them. We both know from survey after survey saying this age group want to work for a company that is into sustainability, transparency. You know, they don't want any of the toxic managers of the past. And, you know, the behaviour of the two people at the senior top of this company just flies in the face of that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to impact your ability to hire staff and retain staff is massive.
Okay. All right. That makes more sense then. Yeah. Let's talk about relationships in the workplace in general.
Yes.
Do they become a bit of a headache for someone like you who's in the HR area, that when you hear two people might be going out and they don't have to, it doesn't have to be seniority implied or anything, they could be in the same department. Is that a bit of an issue?
Look, this is Ireland. It's a smaller country. There's always people who have, you know, met in the workplace, married in the workplace. And I think, you know, most small to medium firms, look, you declare it, people know about it, and it's not a big issue.
You declare it?
Oh, yeah.
You have to tell who?
Yeah.
Who do you tell?
Well, I think if someone in a senior management position is dating somebody who is, like, not at the same level of them, there would probably be an obligation or an understanding that you would say it to HR.
Okay.
Just so that you are removing yourself from any conflicts of interest.
Okay.
I mean, imagine if there was a redundancy program in your company right now. You're sleeping with the boss. You're selected for redundancy. You know, people are going to point the finger. You're going to have a case to go to a solicitor and say, hey, you know, he was disgruntled with me and he sacked me or he chose me for redundancy. So it does cause headaches in the workplace.
And then what if it's someone who's on the same level as you? Do you have to declare it then?
No, there's no legal obligation to declare it. I mean, it varies company by company, Orla. Mm. And the more I see of companies these days, particularly startups, you know, they're getting their contracts right in the beginning and they're mitigating against something like this happening down the line. So surprisingly, more and more companies do have like disclosure clauses, and you could lose your job if you don't disclose certain things. And of course, brand awareness is a big thing. But I think the younger people also know that like one viral moment in a surveillance culture can lead to this, you know.
We talked about that when we talked about Christmas parties.
We
as
certainly
well,
did.
You know?
Yes, yes, yes.
Nothing. And they talked about this in this viral clip from Coldplay as well. A lot of people saying, why didn't you just stand there? Because this wouldn't have gone viral if they didn't have such a reaction.
Oh, look, it wasn't it the stupidity of them too, you know, and the brazenness to think that they could go to an arena with, what, 30,000 people and not get highlighted. I mean, it would never happen in Waterford.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't get past the turnstile down in what, Welsh Park, and the person would say to you, oh, I see you're not with the wife today, or vice, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's so funny about it.
Okay, as we said, your book is called, and we have to get this one right, don't we? Nude, Rude, Lewd, Crude, Screwed and Sued. And sued is the big one, isn't it? That's what companies don't want to be sued.
Oh, absolutely. Look, if you look at those two executives, I can't even imagine what their salaries, their pensions, their share options. So, you know, this lady, Kristen Cabot, is on leave. So I can imagine the corporate and the legal issues that are being resolved there or are being attempted to resolve, because it gets very messy when you've got like senior players with large amounts of remuneration to sort out.
Mm. And it sounds like you believe that younger people understand this better.
I do. I think certainly, like, I've been involved in the tech world for many years now, and the younger people are definitely, they're much more into only accepting a job where they believe that the culture fits with their values and with their expectations. You know, they talk about openness and transparency, and they will very forthrightly in interview, while you're asking them tech questions, they will come back and ask you for examples where you've demonstrated this, that or the other. And, you know, some surveys have recently shown that employees are much more likely to accept a role where a percentage of the profits of the company go to charity, or where there's good green policies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different world, you know. People don't want to work for toxic, old-fashioned companies. They really want openness, transparency, a place where they believe communication is important and that the behaviour is role-modelled from the top, because they really get it. Behaviour at the top is what's important, because that's what filters down. What do they say? Culture eats strategy for breakfast?
I've never heard that before.
Or is it strategy eats culture for breakfast? I can't remember. It's one or the other. But basically, if it's not coming from the top down, you know?
Okay. Well, as a HR expert, what would be some of your tips that would you give to people today when it comes to the workplace and maybe relationships or considering a relationship in work?
Oh, look, that's a tall order.
Don't do it.
I would say don't do it. Why make your life more complicated than it needs to be? But look, the heart wants what the heart wants. And I think what's come out in the last week since this whole crisis has happened for Astronomer, the company, is that the tighter your policies are up front, and the more when you hire people that they know what's expected of you, both in terms of romances in the workplace. That makes it easier for everybody. So it's having the conversation so that you're not having to sort out the mess afterwards.
Yes. Okay. If you are not particularly high up in the company and you end up in a relationship, whatever level those people are in, keep it to yourself. Would that be what you'd say? Maybe don't tell people or...
Oh, I would say don't breach the company policy, Orla.
Okay, don't breach the company policy.
And maybe don't go to a Coldplay concert.
Don't go to... don't get yourself filmed.
That's
Elaine,
it.
You have 50 of these stories in your book. You have seen it all, have you?
Oh my God, like... My book, it was a project I did during COVID when I was in lockdown, because I'd heard so many executives at senior level say, it's not about the tech, it's about the endless HR issues. And it's about, there, you know, if you think about it, iPhones and iPads and the available of videos. It's only been in recent years that this has all entered the workplace with no training.
And is that the main problem? The
oh
fact that everything
God.
Is recordable?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's the trouble people get into with their phones in the workplace. You know, with videos and with viral moments that, you know, they put up on the internet. And yeah, it's endless. My stories were just endless during COVID when I thought back to the CEOs and all the stuff they had to deal with.
And we spoke before about the Christmas parties, as I said, and how they're an extension of the workplace. But coming back to this viral clip, if you're filmed in a compromising position, whatever that might be, but you're not in the workplace, it's not a work moment, does that have an impact on you as an employee?
It does. It goes back to what's after happening to the guy at this
yeah.
centre of this, Andy.
Yeah.
He obviously did reputational damage to the company okay. without a shadow of a doubt. You know, the company would very easily be able to prove that has a link to a financial impact in a negative way.
Okay.
And therefore, you know, he's going to suffer the consequences from it, like, you know.
Yeah,
and in his case,
stressful.
It was termination.
Yeah.
But yeah.
yeah,
yeah. I mean, often even, you know, people at much lower positions are told about wearing branded clothing and caps
okay.
and, you know, behaving, you know, in a bad way. And, you know, just to be very mindful of not bringing, you know, brand and reputational damage to the company.
OK, good advice there. Scary advice as well.
Very scary. It's a different world
out
there.
It is a different world.
It really is.
Yeah, really is. And you really need to be thinking about that, it seems, when you're out and about. And as we saw last week for Andy and Kirsten as well, didn't expect it to be filmed and for it to go so viral. I have to say, I know... there are in marriages and it's a terrible thing that they did, but wow, they must be feeling like, imagine going that viral worldwide.
I can't imagine that a personal moment has hit 20 million devices in a matter of minutes.
Minutes.
And how quickly their partners were tracked down. And then, of course, the confusion and all the fake statements and fake videos that were out there. I mean, it was just absolutely horrendous for them and for their families. And I think, you know, it captured the public's imagination. And I don't think people were sneering at them and being nasty about them. But it really was like, how could they be so stupid?
Mm.
And, you know, how could they behave so badly in their own firm? Like, it's,
yeah.
you know, people want good role models, don't we?
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than being preached to by somebody, you know, who does the opposite. It's like, you know, when celebrities are flying to green events,
exactly.
like, you know, in their private jets and
yeah.
they're telling you to turn off your tap and not flush your toilet.
Mm-hmm. But celebrities don't have bosses who can fire them, it would seem. Great to talk to Elaine. Elaine's book is called, and here we go again, it's a long one, Nude, Rude, Lewd, Crude, Screwed and Sued, 50 HR Stories from the Modern Workplace. That is by Elaine Fennelly. Thanks a million for coming in. If you check that out online, you'll be able to find it on all good websites.
On
Thanks
Amazon
so much.
And in local bookshops.
Yes, I didn't want to say the A word, but yes, local
Thank
bookshops
you,
too. Thanks a million.
Bye, bye, bye.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning here on Beat, it is the Sunday Grill, and a piece of Irish World War II history was unearthed in North Wexford during the week. We've spoken to historian Michael Fortune, the man behind folklore.ie, many times on the Sunday Grill, from different pieces of folklore history in Halloween to the tiniest St. Patrick's Day parade. He has been the man who's told us all. And this week he joins me to tell us about the rediscovery of the Era sign off Cahor Point in North County Wexford. You're very welcome. You're not in North County Wexford now. You're in sunnier climes, I hear.
Yeah, I'm over in Brittany, which I suppose is it's like an extension of Wexford, really, just with a tiny bit more sun, but not too much either, to be fair.
Yeah, that's the side of France that you kind of are taking a chance on, aren't you, when you go on holidays there when it comes to the weather?
Yeah, they're used to the rain. It's green for a reason.
Yes. Well, anyway, let's go back to the green cliffs of Cahors. Yes. And you're from this area, aren't you, Michael? You grew up around Ballygarrett and Cahors.
Yeah, I grew up in Ballygarrett. So we grew up literally, you know, a mile and a half away from Cahors. And the gas thing was, Orla, we never knew about this air sign at all. We never knew about those signs. We knew about the lookout post. So for any of your listeners there, when they built these air signs, when they put them up around 1943, they put a little lookout post for men to be able to just basically keep an eye on and take note of what was going up and down the Irish Sea, okay, from where they were based, any kind of activity at all. So the lookout post was there, but the actual air sign, there was no sign of it whatsoever.
And explain for people who don't know what the air sign was. It was there for a very specific reason and about our neutrality in the 40s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. They were put up around, the idea was around 1942, 43, and the idea was that they would kind of indicate from the air to the Allies in particular that they were flying over neutral Ireland, okay, right? Now, obviously, it would have worked well for the Germans as well, but it was a kind of more benefit to the Americans. And later on, the Americans, I think they asked for these numbers to be put to be put beside them. So basically, for anyone that doesn't know, so you'd have a large, you know, maybe 5 meters lettering of EIRE spelled. There was no FOTA.
Okay.
And then later on, so you'd have those, about 83 of them all around the coast of Ireland. And then later on, they put a number beside it. So the first one starts up in County Louth, and then okay, it went all up into the 80s, up to Donegal.
Okay,
so
and Cahors, 83 in total.
83 in total.
Okay.
And Kilmichael up in North Wexford was number 10. Then
yes,
Cahors Point was 11. There was one in Ballyconiger, which is lost to the sea. There was a lot of coastal erosion there. That's
okay,
gone.
Yeah.
And they went all the way around the coast, south coast of Wexford, down to the Hook, and then over into Waterford and Cork and on again.
And quite close together then, if there was one in Kilmichael, one in Ballyconiger, one in Cahors, for example.
Yeah, and all those, like, they would have had telephone lines to those lookout posts. And actually, the really lovely, interesting thing as well, Orla, is the lookout posts, the records that the men kept are available in the military archives. I've read the Cahors ones, and they're great. Like, even as a child, we grew up hearing stories that there was a dogfight off Cahors. And sure, you know, there'd be older men telling you the story, and sure, you wouldn't pay any passing it. But going through the lookout post records, I was going through it one evening, and didn't I find just a little one line, you know, the way the lads witnessed, you know, a British plane, you know, firing shots at a German plane, and that was it. So, wow. But those little, yeah, so they were there, and even look when what we're looking at, we're looking at an MPC, but the vessels they were describing going up and down the sea were like steam trawlers, and even the types of vessels are, you know, they're resigned to history now at this stage.
Yeah.
So they're great records.
Yeah,
but this
times.
Actual. Yeah, but the air sign itself is just like, that's it's gold, like something physical like that to be.
And how did you pinpoint where it was on the cliffs in Cahors? Obviously, there's the Cahors cliff walk now.
Yeah.
But you wanted to do this pre-COVID, and how do you find it?
Basically, there was a man in Arklow called Ozzy Kelly. And back in just before COVID, January 2020, I'd heard it was there. Ozzy sent me a photograph and said, come here, it's there, it has to be there. So we went down one Saturday, wet Saturday, and we found the 11. And Cahors, the cliff, it's actually a steep enough cliff.
Yeah, it is.
So we found the 11, and all the best intentions to come back to do is to work on it. And sure, I've just too many pokers in the fire.
Yeah.
And couldn't get near it. And so what happened then was about a year ago, a young lad from Ballyconnew called Sean O'Brien contacted me, and he said to me, listen, will you show me where that 11 is? And he was on to me, and I just never get the time. And it was literally just before, the day before I went over here on holidays here to Brittany, it was late June, and I went down with him, with Sean and a man called Owen Dunbar from Gorey, and I said, come here, and we went down, and I was able to show him the 11. The 11, we'd uncovered some of the stones,
mm-hmm,
that was really clear. And when we were there, we said, jeez, we've just faced with us now, we'll walk over to the cliff. Now, we assumed that there was a lot of slippage there on that cliff,
mm-hmm,
and we assumed it was gone, and it was not a trace of it from the eye, or even from drone shots. So we said, we went over, I had a photograph on my phone, and literally just walked it, and literally figured out a couple of rocks, got a bit of a placement, banged down the spade, lifted the sod, and we found
straight away,
literally a few minutes. Now we've also found, like, when you're uncovering it, little bits of the limestone, the whitewash that was used to paint it, so that was still on some of the rock.
Okay.
But the great news is, like, Sean is part of a mocker in Kilmuckridge, local mocker group, so a whole good circle of lads there is dying to work and do, and you know, do do do. get stuck in.
Yeah.
So he organised last Sunday down in Cahor, and they all came along. I wasn't there. I didn't do any of the heavy lifting at all.
You absconded to France.
Yes. Yeah. And the boys are basically cleared off the R. And we can see there's a little bit of the letters either side of it.
Okay.
So it's fantastic news. Made in local stone as well. And the great thing about the Wexford ones, or the Cahor ones in particular, is that it's number 11. But there's also, when you look at the old air photograph, the aerial photograph, uh-huh. you can see that there were two errors. And the reason was because the boys down Cahor decided they were going to put the lettering up. And then someone came along and told them, lads, that's too small. So they had to basically, it was a Friday evening job. And so they had to make it bigger. So, yeah, no, I don't know how much of the small era is there still.
And Michael, if you were going for a walk, say on the Cliff Walk today, what would you see?
It's actually tricky enough to see. Because it is literally on the Cliff Walk on your left hand side. So you will make it out, or if not, you go to the folklore.ie page. You'll see a video that one of the lads and Everick's
and it's completely
made.
Uncovered now. You'll see the era.
You'll see the R
and the R.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there's still, the lads are going down there, as far as I know, this weekend, and they're going to do some more work on it.
Okay.
And then I'll be back in a couple of days' time, and we'll go down again. But it will be, the plan is to have it uncovered by the end of the summer. And then, you know, it'll be a job then. There's a great tidy towns in Ballygarrett as well. Really, really good tidy towns, a good community there. So hopefully in time, people will kind of look after it. And, you know, it's a great, come here, it's a lovely, it's such a unique little thing to Ireland, I find. You know,
oh, really? Such a piece of history from our not so distant past, you know, that we were neutral during World War II, and this is how we told people in the air that you were passing over in neutral territory. Is the one in Kilmichael visible?
It's not, but no. I know where it is.
Okay.
And I have the aerial shots. We found, myself and the team, again, was myself and Owen Dunbar and a man called Barry Lacey. After we found Cahor back then, literally just before the curtains came down with COVID, we went down to the Hook, and we had the one, the Hook, and we went down with literally about an hour. We figured out, based on the aerial photographs again, we figured out where the lettering was. We dug a sod around it. We marked one of the corners of one of the letters. And the one in the Hook, Orla, is absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
It's a flat. It's on the flat. Mm-hmm. Really nice cut stone. The locals haven't done anything down there yet. I'd love to see them doing it, because it would just be, you know, you can imagine an aerial shot of the Hook Lighthouse and the air sign beside it. So hopefully in time someone will do that.
Brilliant
but
stuff.
Cahor was the first, and hopefully it'll be the first one in Wexford to be properly recognised as
a stuff. Well, there is a website about it all. It's airmarkings.org if you want to have a look at some of them that are available to have a look at. There's one in Dalkey, for example, as well. Up in Donegal too, there's one uncovered. And there's a very famous one at Brayhead, isn't there, that was really cleaned up and restored a few years ago.
Yeah, there was fires. I think there was a gorse fire, and it was on Brayhead. And basically, until when they cleared after the fires, you could see it. Loads survived on the west coast, in particular. Maybe the landscape. You know, the way we were probably a little bit agricultural, I suppose. But I know, like, coastal erosion definitely got rid of the one in Ballyconegar.
Okay.
But listen, we're over the moon. Yeah, and I'm delighted as well, because come here to me, I'm delighted Sean put the pressure on me a little bit sick. Mom, will you show me this? And then when we found it then, and sure, it's a good story, and it's a good community story.
And
as
I say
well.
You're delighted you're in France and don't have to do any of the heavy lifting as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'm missing out on all the good bits, though.
Well, listen, enjoy your last few days. I'm enjoying hearing all the children screaming in the background. There must be a water park or something nearby.
I am, far from aeroscience, yeah.
Well, you can check out a really lovely video that Michael has up on folklore.ie as well. They're on Facebook, but obviously you can search folklore.ie, and then that one about the era signs is airmarkings.org. A really lovely piece of history, and very Irish piece of history as well, to come back to County Wexford. Michael Fortune, thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
You're listening to Beat. It's a Sunday morning, and it may only be July 27th, but during the week, Rachel from Beat News donned her scarf and winter boots and headed to panto rehearsals at the SETU Arena in Waterford. Yes, you heard me. panto rehearsals. Preparations for Jack and the Beanstalk, the tale of magic beans, are underway with the promise of an all-star cast. And this week, one of those stars were uncovered. And if you're a fan of Dancing with the Stars or Mrs. Brown's Boys, then you might recognise the voice of Mother Hen. Rachel has all the deets.
It might still be summer, but panto season is coming around fast.
Oh no, it's not.
And at the SETU Arena, the team are gearing up for the Southeast's largest pantomime, Jack and the Beanstalk. Getting ready to hit the stage in his first ever panto is Mrs. Brown's Boys star Danny O'Carroll. Earlier this week, I caught up with him to see how he's feeling ahead of his panto debut.
I don't know what to feel. I just got makeup on and I just see myself in the mirror for the first time. And I'm a little bit in shock, I have to be honest. I came down here thinking that I'd be playing Buttons or, a silly character. No, they gave me a dress and they dressed me up in drag. So I'm playing Mother Hen. So, I'm taking after my dad, I suppose. Putting the dress and the bra on.
Is it your first time in full drag?
Yes, never did drag before in my life, so this is all new to me. How it's going to go, your guess is as good as mine.
I want to know if there's a song in the charts at the moment, or a song in the last couple of years, that you think would make great panto content.
We're doing a Pink Pony Club. I watched the professional dancers doing that in Dancing with the Stars, and it is very, very good. I won't be doing it like them, I can tell you that much. But listen, there's going to be great songs in it. I can't wait to see Richie dance to Pink Pony Club. That'd be fun. But yeah, I'm excited. Listen, first time doing panto, it's all new. But it's going to be good fun. I'm just really looking forward to it.
Joining Danny on stage are a whole host of local stars, including Evan O'Hanlon, Jamie Drowan and Sharon Clancy. The man behind it all is panto legend Richie Hayes, who says he's delighted to be bringing a national star to Waterford to work with a local team.
The idea for me to do this production here was always a dream of mine, to be able to come back home. And as I said, this is my 25th anniversary of doing panto after 12 in the Gaiety and 13 in Limerick, and my years at Waterford Panto Society as well, where it all started for me. So it was always my dream to come back here with a full scale production, which is now what we're doing. The angle also was to create work. We export so much work out of this county and the southeast. Anybody involved in the panto season has to leave early and head off and not be home for Christmas except for that day. And it's a pity that we can't provide work for them locally. This is doing exactly what I wanted it to do. Jack and the Beanstalk is going to be a giant of a panto in so many ways. I said I was going to put on the best show I possibly could, and I'm delighted that Danny has come on board. I called in a big favour, and he's a good friend, and I know he's going to light up the stage as Henrietta Mother Hen.
Jack and the Beanstalk comes to the SETU Arena from December 17th.
And it runs until December 30th. Tickets are available at Great Events. Just search the Arena Panto, Jack and the Beanstalk. You can also follow them on socials just by searching the Arena Panto. You'll find them there on Instagram and Facebook. That is December 17th to December 30th for the panto Jack and the Beanstalk, the tale of magic beans at the SETU Arena in Waterford.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat on a Sunday morning. You're listening to the Sunday Grill. Let's do a movie review. And if you're a parent, this might be one to give you maybe an hour and a half of relaxing time as your kids watch this, because it's currently the most streamed movie on Netflix globally. It's clocked up more than 33 million views in just 2 weeks. It's been out for the past month. But chances are, unless you have a 7 to 12 year old child in your house, you won't have a clue what K-pop Demon Hunters is about. Well, Brian was one of the clueless.
The 7 to 12 year old children mentally.
He was definitely one of the clueless, but he took one for the team.
Yeah.
And spent an afternoon with Netflix and the K-pop animated band that is Huntrix. Is that what they call themselves? Okay.
So. Hunters. Oh, could be just Hunters.
No, I think you might be right with the Huntrix. I think the slash is meant to be like an I. So. Yeah. Well, what did he think? Let's have a listen to a clip and then he'll tell us all about it.
The world will know you as pop stars. But you will be much more than that. You will be hunters.
Hey, this is the men's bathhouse. Get out of here!
They're stealing the souls of our fans? Let's send those disgusting demons back to the depths where they belong!
I can destroy the hunters for good.
That is a clip from K-pop Demon Hunters. My 9-year-old has spoken about this at length for the last 2 weeks. It's the best thing ever.
This is the first time we've done a movie based on what your daughter
what
is
Hannah
going to
decided
for
and
us.
And her friends.
Yes. Hannah and her friends have decided this for us.
Yeah. Her friend Ava told her it was brilliant. She watched it, agreed. And I can imagine, like, what was your movie of your youth when you were 8 or 9? You know, what
Shrek
was the
2.
Thing that everyone loved? Yeah, Shrek 2.
Well, yeah, that would have been my one.
Everyone spoke about that. I think K-pop Demon Hunters is going to be Hannah's.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Interesting.
Poor Brian. Let's talk about it. What's it about?
Okay. Well, the name actually gives a lot away of what the actually happens, but also at the same time that might confuse you more. Mm. So K-pop, we're aware, Korean pop, I feel like that also has to be just explained. So K-pop, Korean pop, the Korean pop stars, they're this all-girl band, there's 3 of them, and at the same time, they also hunt demons. Because the demons take the souls, energy from people's souls once they have them under control.
Okay.
But singing can like relift people's energy.
This is so a bit of you, Brian.
Oh, Orla, I might have talked this down when I was talking to you. I love this.
Hannah is going to be so happy.
I had a great time. At one stage, I even like, I caught myself doing this, a little shimmy. And I was like, I must actually point that out to Orla because I literally got completely caught up in it. And like a name like K-pop Demon Hunters, I didn't have the highest expectations
no,
in the entire
not.
World.
Of course not.
However, I had heard rumblings of this film and how it was doing creative things with animation.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it did. It looks good. It looks good movie. And the songs slap. The songs are great. And also, there are some famous people in it. Like, generally, when you're like, we're watching a movie centered around Korea,
yeah.
You hear a voice, and you're like, oh no, I'm racist. I think this is someone I don't know.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I was like, that sounds like Ken Jeong. I looked up the cast.
Oh, yes.
It was Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong is in this, yeah.
And then there was this other voice, and I was like, this feels racist. That guy sounds like the guy from Squid Game. Looked it up. It was the guy from Squid Game. And then I looked up the other cast, and there was a really, like, this actually got me excited, and it was such a dumb thing to get me excited about. But there's a reunion here that I haven't seen happen before. 2 characters from Lost, you know, like the Korean couple,
yeah.
They are both in this as voices.
Brilliant.
Which I think is so kind of wholesome. Yeah. So like for the voice, I know Liza Koshy, the ex-YouTuber,
okay.
But she's also in it as well. She has a small little part in it. There's actually another YouTuber, ProZD, but he's more famously as a voice animator. He's in it as well. And I had a great time with this.
Yeah.
It's simple fun.
Yeah.
The music is class.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about basically there's a girl group and there's 3 of them in it, and one of them is actually half demon, half hunter.
Oh.
Which...
Very,
you know,
okay.
Not ideal, because they're hunting demons.
Yeah,
and then
and she has to really hold back on the demon side of her.
They are just about to basically every song they release, the demons get harder to like exist.
Uh-huh.
And if they release enough good music, this is so silly when I explain it now, but at the time I was like, this makes sense. If they release enough good music, they can kind of end the demons.
Excellent.
Like they can kind of cut off the demons completely forever. But then. Hold your horses. There's demons being like, we can make an all boy group.
Rival band.
Yes.
Okay.
And they capture the hearts of the nation, but then they try and capture the souls of the nation. But it's basically the incidents that go on between there. But it's a whole thing of whether if you're a demon, can you actually be good? And it, like if you're like, what's your kind of. Where do you stand on like representing yourself and stuff? And I love things like that. So, Orla, I'm not going to lie. I went in with this being like, okay, it's an hour and a half now. And this is going to just be something that I'm like, what is she making me do? I had a great time.
I'm delighted.
This is actually rated higher than Superman on IMDb.
Listen, it's a track from it called Golden, which you will know, obviously.
Yes, of course.
It hit number 2 in the charts and it surpassed Blackpink, who are huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. In fact, one of the women from Blackpink was in White Lotus this season.
Yeah.
So like Blackpink are the highest charting female K-pop group. So it's absolutely massive. And the producers of this movie as well include Teddy Park, who's worked with Blackpink and BTS collaborators too. And of course, BTS are returning because they've done their military service in Asia and they're coming back. Yeah.
Well,
so it's time for K-pop again, Brian.
I think they saw a trend.
Oh, and they went
jumped
for it.
On it. But not only that, they did it well.
Tell me about this interesting thing being done with animation that you just said that you read about.
It's just, well, people are just saying that like there's certain things like animated movies aren't doing as well because you know, like some movies like Elio came out and didn't do well at all.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying that like, oh, is animation kind of dead? It's like, not really, because something like this, like it's kind of combining kind of the style of anime with kind of more Spider-Verse type animation.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
Right,
like
right.
Because they're there. Like, it's so silly though as well. Like, they'll make a joke. They'll be like, nothing can ever stop us. And they are like, oh, no, like, we'll be fine. And then they get a comment, we're not fine. This is not. And I was like, I love that. That's so dumb. It's great. Like,
I love that sort of stuff.
There's another stage where a fella is so good looking, like a girl falls over. Like, the main character falls over because
so
the guy is so good.
There for adults as well.
It's so like light. Okay. It's, I mean, it's so turn off your brain.
Yeah.
There's no focus here. You can have fun. You can bop away to the songs.
And your kids can watch it as well. So, you know, it's on Netflix right now. As I said, it's just a mega hit.
It's number
for
one. It was number one on Netflix when I was watching it. So.
Well, I will be watching it for the third time tonight.
Really?
Let's do some black puddings.
I would give it. Do you know what? I had a great time watching it. I think I actually give it a 9 out of 10. You know, I genuinely.
I'm so happy because I actually. It took me 5 minutes of me thinking, "Am I going to suggest this movie, K-pop Demon Hunters, to him? Would he do it?" And I was like, "He's going to do it."
Yeah, no, because I like from the level I've, let's say Superman last week, right?
Yeah,
I had expectations going in. And it actually matched what I had thought. Okay. And it was a high level, but it matched it. This, I was like, oh no, this is going to be nothing. And then I watched it and I was like, this is great. I had a great time.
Good stuff.
So, yeah.
9 black puddings out of 10. It's called K-pop Demon Hunters. It is out on Netflix as we speak. A massive hit for them. If you see it in your suggestions or in the top 10, don't pass it by. Don't think it's not for you. You will be bopping away, and you might become a BTS fan because of it. Thanks,
yeah,
a million,
it's for
Brian.
7 to 12 year old girls and 28 year old boys.
Yeah, thanks a million. See you next week.
No bother.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.